Welcome to the Goracom podcast, where investors discover great small cap companies. Thank you for taking a Goracom with you, and make sure to follow our podcast.
Welcome to Beyond the Press Release, a production of Goracom, in which we speak with small cap executives after they put out important news. With us today, man, he's been in stealth mode, and we're happy to have him back because we've missed him, but we also got a lot of hard questions for him. Steve McCauley is the CEO, Empower Clinics, trades in Canada, EPW, trades in the U.S., EPWCF. For those of you who might not know about the company, or for existing shareholders that have been out of touch for a little while, let's remember that Empower is a healthcare company with a developing research and clinical trials division that is currently achieving early success in both the Dallas and Los Angeles markets, including already being awarded the first clinical trial from a global Fortune 500 pharmaceutical company, and have multiple clinical trials potentially in the pipeline in terms of applications. Their timing couldn't be better. Fortune Business Insights is saying that the global clinical trials market is projected to reach $95 billion by 2030. That's because of expanding pharmaceutical, biotech, medical device, you name it. Why? As developed G20 nations demographics get increasingly older, there's going to need more medications. Empower Clinics is going to play a critical role there. And the latest update, the press release that we're talking about, Empower Clinics announces issuance of partial revocation order. Steve, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, George, thank you. It's been a while, and I appreciate everybody being patient with us. And I'm looking forward to, you know, now coming with a good update, lots of communication, sort of normal course communication going forward. And this is a great starting point for us.
All right. Well, then, before we talk about you coming out of stealth mode, because I think a lot of people want to hear about the guns and butter. Okay. So how's that first trial going with the global Fortune 500 pharmaceutical company that you announced back in September with your Dallas partners? Is it going well? Are revenues coming in? Give us a flavor for that.
Yeah. You know, it is going well. You know, it's, we got ourselves up and running, you know, negotiated contracts. We got our oversight committee called IRB review done. We hired a great study coordinator in the local market. Study coordinator is a research professional, and they're the ones that really work closely with the patients at the site. They're the ones really doing the work and doing the recruitment work. And so it has going well. We've got our first patients lined up for initial visits. And keep in mind that every time there's a touch point with a patient, that generates payments and fees and new revenue for our organization. But, you know, since November, we've started invoicing under our contract. So we've now already generated brand new revenue that we've never had before in the history of the company. And these are the payments coming directly from, you know, from Sanofi, the, you know, the Fortune 500 pharma company, French pharmaceutical company. And you know what? So far, so good. We're kind of pleased with the operations. We're obviously getting much better at, you know, at the work that we're doing. We're building a name for ourselves within the pharmaceutical industry. You know, I attended a conference a few weeks back and really getting to know vendors, getting to know other sites, getting to know investors in the healthcare community, particularly in the US, that, you know, follow research and follow clinical trials. So I think we can kind of confidently say, you know, we're truly up and running as a site management organization. And we've been working very hard behind the scenes on business development and growth activity to really expand this footprint for ourselves.
All right. Now, I've always said in our conversations, when we have, I said, one is great. First of all, it's monstrous because I know what it's like to get through a process like that, and it is a minefield. So to get through it, make Empower eligible and get your first one is fantastic. But I've always said to you, Steve, in my personal opinion, I think you need to get to three before the shareholders probably really embrace and get excited about it and then can start planning the future. So last time we spoke, you said, I'm going to quote you from a press release, we continue to process multiple trial applications on behalf of our current PIs And as such, anticipate additional sponsored due diligence, site visits, and potential awards. So are those numerous applications still out there? And what is their status? How is it looking to get the second one in and potentially the third one in?
Sure. So how should I start this? One of the things that we have felt is very important is to be quite focused in our approach to growth and mainly around markets. I want us to have a kind of a hub approach. I don't like the idea of having random one-off sites in different parts of the country that are ultimately going to be difficult to manage. So, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth is a hub. It's huge. Los Angeles and LA County is a hub for us, and it's huge and it's diverse. But importantly is I have a network there. We have a network there. And we really focused in on that market as our next major hub. And we've been working on that over the last 3 to 4 months very aggressively. And we've managed to identify 6 large practices, of which 4 are under contract, and with multiple PIs in each practice, giving us a really dynamic pipeline. And we're always doing it by focusing on key practices that we know there is a lot of interventional drug studies happening now, but more importantly, there's a huge pipeline coming in these categories or diagnosis or disease states or conditions. So we're trying to be very thoughtful about our approach. We're being very aggressive in identifying candidates and practices. And we have a really neat formula. And it's basically, we've got a recruiting person on the ground in Los Angeles, and she's done a tremendous job for us. And the goal is to get me 15 minutes on a Zoom call with the practice, because that's all it takes for us to really pitch the opportunity, the feature and benefits, the, you know, what's in it for the practice, and what their responsibilities are and what our responsibilities are. So I'd say to, you know, the answer to your question is the pipeline is enormous. We have many, many, many applications on the go. We have many that are not open for application yet. They're active trials, but not recruiting. But we've got our hand up to say, the moment it opens up, we've got the PIs and the practices. So it's just kind of like this kind of rolling process to build a funnel. And we know you don't win every single opportunity. We had 2 cardiology opportunities in Dallas, where both pharma companies, 2 separate interventional drug studies, they just closed out accepting any more sites in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. You know, we were a little bit late.
It wasn't a case
of
you getting rejected. It was just a case of other guys had gotten in ahead of the ahead.
It was late in the game in getting, you know, into those applications. And they came back to us and said, sorry, we're not accepting any more sites. So it wasn't a reflection on our application or the study team is simply, you know, closing out in a particular market. So, you know, having, different hubs is going to be important for us. And again, we're going to focus on areas where there are a large, diverse population base and markets where we have a network that we can leverage.
So last time we spoke, you had 2 active sites with 6 principal investigators, and that was all Dallas. But correct. I mentioned Los Angeles, obviously, because we've talked about it. You mentioned Los Angeles now. So talk to us about how, what you've been doing on the business development side over the past 6 months, while you've been in stealth mode, and how much bigger you're at now in terms of active sites and principal investigators.
Yeah, well, if you think the addition of the 4 new ones that are under contract, there's probably, if I had to try to count them offhand, in the neighborhood of 14 PI candidates within
these
4. Because you have to remember that some of these practices that we're targeting are the largest in their field in that particular market. So it's not necessarily one site, one PI. You know, one of the practices is a very large group. They have 3 specialists. Another practice has 14 specialists within the group and 4 locations. So it's not just one site, one location. It can be multiple sites, multiple PIs, multiple studies at the same time, even for the same intervention. So, you know, we're trying to position ourselves to bring really great value back to the practice, try to position ourselves with them to help them create new, fresh revenue and particularly cash flow, bottom line cash flow for their practice without putting too much pressure on their practice, because we place the study coordinator, we build the research team, we do the patient recruitment, we see the patients, you know, on behalf of research. And that's just the way, you know, a site management organization is supposed to work.
Yeah, you're like a layer two, right on top of the layer of the clinic or the practice itself. You're like a second layer set on top of it. If I do quick math, you had two active sites, now you've got six. So you've tripled the active sites while you're in stealth mode. And you had, last time we spoke in the fall, you had six, by interview for all the shareholders, you had six principal investigators. Now you got 14. So you're about 133% growth there. So you tripled one, 130. So yeah. you've really been moving. What does it mean to have such a strong presence in two major cities like Dallas and Los Angeles in terms of, because this is what shareholders really want to know.
Yeah.
Which is, okay, you're building up this strong foundation and you want to get more awards on top to generate revenue. What does it mean now to have a presence in two major cities in terms of your reputation and your validation, and even for shareholders to prove to them that you're on the right track? Because these guys are smart people. They're not going to come do it with me. There's a reason why they're doing business with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we've done for ourselves is, you know, we've validated that we have a model that we understand. We think that we've got a great plan in the way that we introduce it to practices and PI candidates. I kind of describe ourselves, you know, as a matchmaker. We're sitting right in the middle of big pharma who have the clinical trials to award and the practices and the PIs on the other side. And we facilitate it and matchmake and put it all together. In our model, we own the contract with the big pharma company and we initiate contracts with the specialists and with the practice. And, you know, they get their portion as a fee, and it's all a portion of the contract. And the flow of funds comes from big pharma through to us. And once we get paid, then we pay out the practice and the specialist on the other side. So it's a really nice controlled cash flow model for us. And once you get into the contract, you start to get into this monthly rolling revenue cycle. It's not a cycle where you have to perform clinical trials for a year and then you get a lump sum payment at the end. It doesn't work that way. It effectively is, we get set up in administration fees as part of the agreements, but then it's all about patient visits. And so the more patients that you can get recruited into your trial or study is another description for it, then the larger the scale of the revenue associated with it for everybody involved, for us as the site management organization, and that value for the practice and for the principal investigator. So we're all kind of attached at the hip. You know, big pharma wants the patients because they need diverse patient data to get their FDA approval over the finish line. And then they will have, you know, billions of dollars of opportunity beyond that. So it's a very interesting part of healthcare that we really like. There's no medical billing. There's no insurance companies that we have to wait to get paid for. And so it's just a piece of, or a big giant part of healthcare that I think we're kind of made for. You know, keep in mind our history. We've always managed patients. We've always managed facilities. We've always managed doctors. And we're still doing the same thing, but in a different realm of healthcare.
Oh, in a way different way, because you have almost next to no CapEx, capital expenditure. By the way, remind everyone at home, because some investors are going to be thinking, Steve, why the hell do these big pharmaceutical companies need you? Why don't they just go direct to these sites and principal investigators? And remind everyone that they can't do that because they have to be armed. They've got to have arm's length in between that they don't influence the trials, right?
You, they got need it. You I mean,
to be. You there, have to be there.
Big time oversight going on here. I mean, we're even governed by the FDA through what's called IRB, the Investigational Review Board. Nothing happens without IRB's approval. Nothing happens, no changes are allowed to the protocol to, you know, simple things like marketing campaigns. As an example, we just created a draft social media campaign for the Dallas site. And I first had to seek approval from the pharmaceutical company for the content of the campaign. After that was approved, it then had to be sent to IRB to get IRB approval for it. Now, we did receive all of that so we can proceed with the social media campaign to help recruit, you know, different types of patients. But that's just one small example of the strict governance that takes place in the whole ecosystem of pharmaceutical trials. And again, we're just right in the middle of that, playing a very, very important role in facilitating. So it's a stretch, and you're right. It's too difficult in this day and age for a big pharma company to get access to that patient. And that's why individual sites, so sometimes, you know, one medical specialist might take it upon themselves to try to, you know, conduct research and apply for a trial because maybe they just feel they can do it. But oftentimes it's our format, but there's a lot of mom and pop sites, one doctor, one location, that's it. That's what they do. I don't think that's enough for us. I think we've got the capability to scale. I think we can develop real tangible valuation in the future going forward. There are some excellent comps that I've come across recently. Both, you know, public, but more private companies where there's been some huge investments and some huge valuations are being garnered for SMOs, site management organizations like us, who can actually manage multiple practices in multiple cities, ultimately creating tens, 50s, hundreds and more of recruited patients, because that's where the monetary value ultimately, you know, lands, is when patients come into the program.
Now, devil's advocate, why weren't you able to just say all this or communicate all this in the normal way you've always done with me, with press releases? Because this is great news. Love the update. Love how it's going. Because that's, I think anyone's going to be happy to hear that. But why not just communicate this like you always did?
You know, the press release from, I believe it was the second Tuesday, I believe, that went out late in the day. So that special revocation order is something that we've been working on. If you can believe it, it took 5 months to the day. We first submitted the application to BC Securities Commission on November 2nd. We felt that, you know, we could get all of that, you know, processed and approved and announced, you know, probably before the holidays, and, you know, kick the year off right with, you know, those campaigns. I can't tell anybody why it took so long. There was a lot of back and forth. There were a lot of questions and queries. This special revocation is a very little known program. A lot of issuers don't know it exists. A lot of investment banks don't know it exists. We did know, and we wanted to take advantage of it. Ultimately, we're trying to protect EPW, the public company, and all of us shareholders. And we need to get back to trading. But we can't get back to trading until we can get some professional fees, you know, taken care of, internal accounting, auditors, and such, so that we can finish our filings and we can get back to trading. Now, this is a application that comes with tremendous scrutiny, and because it's such a unique program, we were told that while this application is under review, we cannot be out communicating, promoting, and even having the perception that we might be pre-soliciting support for a private placement. We received guidance that if that were the case, there was a likelihood, and perhaps a strong likelihood, that our application would be denied. And that would
in that case, any likelihood, if there's any likelihood, you're just going to keep your mouth shut and not even going to take a chance.
We had to. You know, what was unfortunate was that this all took 5 months. And so, you know, after we got the press release out, it was filed on CDAR. These were all, we followed all the rules. It, you know, to me, you know, April 3rd was day one for communication. And we started to share it, you know, with, you know, colleagues and our banking friends and supporters. And, you know, this is the first interview, you know, only a couple of days later. The plan here is to kind of get back into normal course interviewing, normal course press releases. We're preparing a corporate update press release that we'll try to get filed for early next week. And then I'll start to be able to provide updates on how are our applications progressing. You know, what categories and disease states are we focused on and why?
Great.
You know, we've got a verbal nod right now for our next clinical trial out of Los Angeles. So we're working through the steps to get there. I think I explained some of those steps previously, but I'd like to put that into follow-up communications and follow-up press releases. And one of the things that I want to try to do with all of this new communication plan here, George, is try to provide kind of the KPIs or the key metrics that are going to make this work for us. Because if we all can understand these critical KPIs, and I can provide regular updates on the progress of those KPIs, then I think everybody will have a fairly clear understanding of how we're making progress, when we're making progress, and how that translates into revenue and free cash flow and EBITDA in the future.
And by the way, for everyone at home, KPIs are key performance indicators. So for example, I'm just guessing, but some KPIs would be number of active sites, number of principal investigators, number of trials have been awarded, number of trials that we're applying for, all those kind of number of patients and in each one of those trials that have been recruited. So everyone could mathematically just keep track now of how the company's progressing. And, you know, it's like the Price is Right. Almost reminds me of the Price is Right where, you know, it keeps going up and up until you get to that bar where you win, you know? So we need to get these. And if it all adds up to this, at this point higher, we win. So that'd be really great, Steve. I think that'd be fantastic.
That's exactly it. And like George, there's almost a level of simplicity in this. You know, there's a lot of moving parts and there's a lot of negotiation. There's a lot of, you know, hard work. There's detailed applications, there's contracts and IRBs. But in turn, if we step back, you know, I want everybody to understand this approach of portfolio management. In our case, our portfolio is our portfolio of study categories. Right now, we're focused on cardiology, pulmonary, neurology, dermatology, rheumatology, and we're looking at gastroenterology is another one that's very big for us. The reason for those six categories has to do with the sheer quantity of active interventional drug studies, particularly phase two and phase three. But then on top of that, the pipeline of what's coming. It's staggering. It's staggering how many new interventional drugs are being worked on. And we want to be right in the middle of that ecosystem, helping, facilitating, but also building a really solid business model that's based on cash flow as a result of that.
And look, I've been doing this for 25 years. And when you say things like, where we want to be, a lot of CEOs say that because, hey, where George Kalm wants to be is I want to be on CNBC and Bloomberg. But how do I get there? And have I proven I can get there? So the reason I bring that up is when you say it, where we want to be is, look, you've already had your first award. So for everyone listening at home, you've already had your first award from a global for a Fortune 500 pharma company. That's huge. You've got six active sites, 14 principal investigators. That means you've got the people to feed these contracts to. So you're not just talking the talk, but you're really walking it. Now you still need to execute and get to the second award and the third award and then show us that each one of those awards, patients are being recruited. But man, again, I'm going to tell you, for everyone at home, this is an incredibly difficult business to get in the door that could take years and you may never even get your foot in the door. And Steve has pivoted in power to the point that awards are coming in and you've got clinics and doctors who are saying, yeah, we want to be part of your team and you be the middleman to matchmake. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Correct. The big question on everyone's mind. Okay. This is great, Steve, but if it succeeds, how do I, as a shareholder, benefit from this because the company's not trading? So I'm going to ask you a couple questions really quick. Will you be trading again soon? You may not have an exact date, but can you give us any kind of indication of when you might be trading?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have an exact date. Like say we had to get through this special revocation order. We've already communicated with the auditors and with accounting. We're working on our plan to reactivate the audit work. We have to finish our filings and we have to do all the work with the commissions to get everything squared up. So, you know, it's not going to be easy. It's going to take some time here. And I don't have an estimate. I think once we get into those conversations with audit and accounting, we will start to have a better sense. But we have to, you know, our goal here is to get back to trading. That, you know, that's our number one goal here. All the work with the application on the revocation order is so that we can get back to trading, right? And if we don't get back to trading, you know, this whole thing's gone anyhow. And so we just can't let that happen. And so we've had to take, you know, make these difficult decisions, change, you know, much of what we're doing, shrink in order to grow later. And we're going to need support. We're going to need support from our followers. We're going to need support from our backers. And, you know, I'll start to provide more information on what this private placement looks like. We have a very prescribed use of proceeds. The number was very prescribed in conjunction with the application from and with the securities.
Yeah, very specific, $976,000.
Yeah.
That definitely sounds like you had to account for every dollar.
We had to account for everything. And there are very specific things that you are not permitted to do. Like we can't, you know, fund an acquisition. We can't pay directors. We can't do this. We can't do that. And we had to demonstrate, you know, basically every penny that's in there has an allocation. And it just happened to add up to that number. And they do allow to have coverage for some working capital. They do allow coverage for, you know, staff salaries and growth. And a big chunk of it is allocated for professional fees for the stated purpose to be able to get EPW fully filed and current and back to trading. That's what this revocation order approval is all about, getting back to trading.
So can investors participate in this? Is this just for the big boys? Or, you know, last time we ever even approached the subject, maybe a couple of years ago, you had about 20,000 shareholders. I don't know if that's still the number.
Yeah, it's kind of 19,000. We have a very huge Nobo list. That's why, you know, mailing costs are so expensive for things like AGMs. But the short answer is yes. And I welcome the support. And I think I'll say it this way is if anybody is interested, and even if it's small participation, and, you know, it's not a large number in the big scheme of things, and it's going to take support from a few different, you know, followers and groups and maybe new groups. But, you know, we need help here. We need help from our supporters who, you know, might have some belief in what we're doing and obviously want to get back to trading. And so I would say, you know, send an email to me with an expression of interest. I've got a Nobo list.
Well, look, if just 500 investors step up, I was just doing quick math while you're saying that. If just 500 investors step up with $2,000 each, or if 2,500 investors step up with 250 investors, sorry, step up with $4,000 each, then there's your $1 million. So we're not talking about a large number of shareholders, and we're not talking about a large investment. So maybe, guys, that's what we're looking at, Steve.
That's exactly kind of numbers up from there. Yeah, and we'll have to make some decisions about, you know, do you put a minimum in place? And if you did, you know, what's that minimum amount? We have to balance it between, you know, the bandwidth to do the paperwork, because whether it's a $1 million check or a $2,500 check, the amount of paperwork is the same. So we have to be a little bit thoughtful about that. But you're right. I think that, you know, in this unique circumstance, you know, we should reach out to our followers who maybe didn't get an opportunity or wouldn't get an opportunity to participate in something like this, because, you know, the private placement is going to be, it's favorably priced and it has a really well-priced 24-month warrant that goes, you know, that's attached to it. So, you know, there's a lot of potential opportunity here, you know, with this private placement. And I would welcome, you know, level of interest from people that maybe, you know, their only route in before was, you know, through their retail brokerage approach. And, but I'll have some emails going out about it, and I welcome inbound emails. If there's a level of interest, we can talk offline about that.
All right. So what are next steps from here? Because there are two very clear tracks. One is the business, keep signing up more principal investigators, but bring in those trials. So make applications, work those applications so you're awarded more trials.
Yes.
And then there's the public market side and fulfilling these steps to go public. So
that's exactly it.
Trading again.
Yeah.
So what's next?
It's kind of like, you know, the kind of getting back to normal course operations, right? When, you know, if you have a role like mine, you know, it's almost like you have two full-time jobs, right? You know, one foot's in the camp of public market stuff and the other foot's in the camp of operations. And we can't lose sight of either. So we just have to be organized, prepared. The private placement work is imminent. You know, we're doing that right now. Documents have been drafted and, you know, conversations have already commenced. So a level of support has already been, advanced to us already. You know, early commitments have been penciled in. So I'm pleased with that. But we need to fill the full book and to give EPW its chance of life again, its chance to get back to trading. We've always been known for strong liquidity. With a large shareholder base that we have, there's no reason why we can't have strong liquidity in the future. But in order to validate the business model, we've got to keep that business development work going and execute, you know, on the growth that's in front of us. But I think we've got ourselves a nice pipeline going. You know, again, we haven't been sitting still over this last period of time. And I think we've opened up a tremendous market opportunity for us. And I'm really comfortable with our formula. I think we've got a rhythm and a cadence for opening up new practices and new doctors and running applications. And I'm excited to see, you know, where we take it over the next, you know, quarter or two.
And I'll tell you what I love about your business. I absolutely love it. It reminds me of, you know, the non-asset business of Uber and Airbnb. You don't have any big capital expenditures here. You don't a warehouse full of George Com products that you buy for a dollar and you want to sell for $1.50 to try and get a margin. Receivables you're chasing, you got to pay payables. This is almost a non-asset business, right, Steve? It's basically some key people on the ground.
Yep. Well, if you think about
match everybody together and then make sure the cash just flows. You're never going to be in a situation, I don't think, where you're going to have a big, we've always heard, you know, a big financial nut, like they say. It's not like, oh man, we need dollars a month just to operate because we got this big enterprise. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and look what we came from. I mean, some of this, you know, came out of necessity is, you know, we have experienced the issues with having, you know, commitment to long-term leases and the expense that goes with that and CapEx and build outs. And it put a lot of pressure on us. So when, you know, I was looking at this was hang on a second here. I think I can get this done and I don't have to lease a medical clinic. I don't have to pay security deposits. I don't have to do a build out, yet I can still generate and create a very good business model. And so necessity brought about this sort of creativity. You know, necessity brought about a different way of thinking about healthcare and managing doctors, managing patients, managing locations. And so far, so good. So there's no reason why we can't keep a formula like this going. I mean, as you scale, you know, you have to hire staff for the work, but it's very different than having large.
But that's variable. That's variable. You're only hiring these people on if you get awarded the contract. That's the beauty. You don't have to hire. You're not opening up a restaurant where you have to do capital expenditures and you have to have 20 staff hired and you hope to God that you get enough customers in to pay for it.
That's right.
This is what's called a variable business. I mean, I love it, Steve. I think you need to get to three. I've always said that, but man, once you get to three,
well, it will be done, George. It will be done.
Just cash flows at that point, you know. It's just cash flows, and once you get to three, then it's just a case of, all right, do you get to 30? Do you get to 50 over the next couple of years, 2, 3, 4 years? And that's the beauty. I know you're still technically a long way from that, but you're actually really close to that because it's very difficult to put. And if you pull this off, once you get to the third one, and I think you will, but we all going to wait. I think everyone says we're going to wait. And I think it might be the greatest pivot I've ever seen in the small cap world, pivoting from one business into another that's more successful, that's more financially viable. I'm going to celebrate you that day, and I think it's going to happen. So,
well, I tell you,
I know how hard it's been for you to bring the company back to this point.
Yeah,
well, it's, but that's your job also, guys at home.
You know what?
I don't care if it's been hard on Steve. He had to do this, but now you got us there.
You know, we had to do this, or you bury your head in the sand and go away, and that's just not my approach, and I don't think any of our shareholders want to see that happen. And this has been about perseverance, about adjusting, about changing, for all the right reasons. And, you know, I feel much better about things where we sit today than I did last quarter and the quarter before that and the quarter before that. So as challenging as it has been, should be a degree of optimism that we have as we sit here today, that we haven't had for quite some time. And so with that optimism, you know, it should motivate us all. And I just want to thank everybody for patience. I want to thank you for support. I've received a lot of comments, a lot of negative ones, but equally I've received a lot of positive comments. You would be amazed at, you know, the continued positivity. So I hope that being able to have this interview go out along with the recent press release, you can kind of now, you know, let everybody realize that there were some reasons for the silence, but we're back to communicating again, and we just want to keep this rhythm going. And who knows, you know, can we get this thing lit back up again like we've had in prior times? Time will tell, but we've got a great asset, which is our shareholder base. And so I'm counting on that support going forward.
Yeah, and I'll end off with this on my side. Look, none of us are happy to be in this position. We would have hoped, you know, the capital market side would have turned out in a different way. Obviously, that's a given. But I'll remind everyone that we're all getting an MBA here in how business actually works sometimes, because I don't know if you've seen it, Steve. I'm sure some of you at home have seen it. If you haven't, you got to watch the Netflix documentary, Race to Space, which is all about Elon and SpaceX. And guys, he had three chances to test a successful launch of his rockets. And if he didn't do it at number three, it was going to fail. And if you watch the documentary, not only did he fail the third one, but he stretched and he failed the fourth one. And then it all came down, like all chips on the table. Nothing was left on the fifth one, right? And they got it right on the fifth one. Now, if you talk to Elon, if you talk to his shareholders and supporters before all that, they would have said, man, this sucks. I wish we would have been successful on the first, second, or third. You killed us on the fourth one, and now we prayed on the fifth. But you know what? After that was done, and they did get through that, and they did experience failure, and they went through the agony of failure, now look at where SpaceX is. And this is what happens to a lot of successful companies. They go through. It's not easy. It's not ordering a pizza. you go through this. And it, again, we're not happy to be here, but I'm really happy, Steve. I'm going to say my opinion only, that you've pivoted us to this point. And I'm looking forward to our SpaceX moment, buddy. And, you know, listen, life is life. And it's going to be a roller coaster.
Here's to a healthcare rocket ship, right?
Yeah, but now hopefully a roller coaster turns into a rocket ship, my friend. So thanks for coming out of stealth mode. Thanks for explaining to us why you have to be in stealth mode. And then look, it's 40 minutes, 39, 59, 40. All right, that's 40 minutes right there. Thanks for doing this, because I think everyone's going to appreciate it. Rightfully so. A lot of people are still going to be skeptical and still, you know, shaking their head and not happy. And I get that. I wouldn't blame everybody. But I also know that everyone watching or listening is going to say, all right, maybe we got something here.
Maybe
we got something. And I'm going to give Steve a chance to make it happen. So good. Thank you, Steve.
Yep. Thank you, George. Thanks for the time.
Well done. And looking forward to the corporate update and then have you back.
Thank you.
For everybody at home, you've been watching or you've been listening by podcast on Spotify, Google, Apple, your favorite podcast platform. Steve McCauley, CEO of Empower Clinics, Trades in Canada, EPW. For our friends in the US, EPWCF. I should say those are the symbols, not trading yet, but that's where the company's aiming for. Thanks for joining us. Would love to see your comments. Want to see your comments on AgoraCom, other forums, X, and other places. And would love to hear your feedback on this. But thanks for joining us. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, because we're doing this at 5:25 on Friday afternoon. That's how important it was for us to get this out. And we'll see you in the next one. Cheers.
Hey guys, this podcast is over. But don't forget to help your company by liking it or even leaving a comment. And then, don't forget to help yourself by following us on Spotify, Google, Apple, or on your favorite podcast platform, so you will never miss another one great Agoracom Small Cap Podcast.